The following sermon was delivered by Senior Pastor Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston in the sanctuary of Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church in New York City. We welcome you to worship with us every Sunday in person or on live stream. For details, go to fapc.org. And now, here's Reverend Dr. Scott Black Johnston.
Lean close, my friends. Let us listen together to the story of the first Easter as recorded in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 24, beginning with the first verse. But on the first day of the week, at early dawn, they came to the tomb, taking the spices that they had prepared. But they found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they went in, they did not find the body. While they were perplexed about this, suddenly two men in dazzling clothes stood beside them. The women were terrified and bowed their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here, but has risen. Remember how he told you while he was still in Galilee that the Son of Man must be handed over to sinners and be crucified and on the third day rise again." Then they remembered his words. And returning from the tomb, they told all this to the 11 and to all the rest. Now, it was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the other women with them, who told this to the apostles. But these words seemed to them an idle tale, and they did not believe them. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb. Stooping and looking in, he saw the linen cloths by themselves. Then he went home amazed at what had happened. This is the word of God for you, the people of God. Thanks be to God. Today's text, the story of Easter, as told by Luke, begins with a small word, but. If I remember my schoolhouse rock, but is a conjunction. Conjunction, junction, what's your function? Hooking up words and phrases and clauses. As far as conjunctions go, but performs its linking function with a twist. It connects two words, phrases, clauses, while also signaling a change in direction. She was a first-rate gardener, but had no luck with roses. Today's text begins with the word but. Easter begins with the word but. I actually thought about entitling this sermon Easter's Big Butt, but then I pictured my wife slowly sinking. Adolescence, it's wasted on teenagers. I digress. Today's text begins with the word but. Easter begins with the word but. For a small word, but has got game. It evokes things that have already happened, and then it pivots. It teases a surprise. It changes the story. I had given up hope, but then I heard a knock at the door. But signals that a sentence or a story or a life is about to turn a corner. To understand how this little word works its magic, we need to look at what comes both before and after the corner. Before Luke 24's initial but, before today's text begins, malice and wickedness rule the day. You know the story. You know how the life of God's beloved unravels in a cloud of dust and hate. Jesus suffered under Pontius Pilate, was crucified, dead, and buried. That's how the Apostles' Creed puts it, and that's basically how Luke 23 plays out. The chapter ends when Christ's remains are placed in a tomb, his friends racked with grief, numbed by the events of Good Friday, make plans to visit his lifeless corpse. End of chapter. In chapter 23 of Luke, a whole lot of awful stuff happens. And then we turn the page. And when we do, Luke says, But on the first day of the week, a group of women came to the garden tomb. They came bringing oils and spices. They came planning to do something gentle in a world that looks down on gentleness. They came expecting to find a tidy grave and a body to wash, and instead they were greeted by an unsettling scene. The stone covering the tomb has been shoved aside. The women peer into the shallow cave, but they cannot spot Christ's body. Easter starts in a mournful place. This world can be appallingly rough. It gnaws on beautiful things. It chews up beautiful people. It leaves us, like the women at the tomb, scared, confused, and so very, very sad. And it's at that moment that Easter leans in. It takes us by the arm and says, come, walk through God's garden at daybreak. There's something here that your exhausted spirits need to see. I know it's been horrible, says Easter. But the stone is gone. But the tomb is empty. But mysterious figures are talking to a group of women. These poor souls look gobsmacked at the strangeness of it all. And then, well, there comes that word again. But, say the angels, he is not here. You're looking in the wrong place. He is risen. At this, the women rush from the tomb. They run to share their wild truth with the disciples. Breathless, they put on white stoles, stand before the faithful, and preach the first Easter sermon. And here Luke keeps the pivots coming. The women preach, but the disciples scoff. It's an idle tale. It's fake news. Rolling his eyes, Luke ends today's story the way he began. But Peter got up and ran to the tomb. Why does Luke keep hammering us with this simple conjunction? Jesus was crucified, dead, and buried. A year ago in Maine, the Portland Press Herald reported the death of a local photographer, graphic artist, and teacher, Kevin Farman. Farman was married to his beloved, Patty. He had three adult children. He liked to sail. He was described as a good friend, a kind neighbor, still Chances are that news of Farman's passing would have made only a momentary ripple in the waters of his main community, but for the scene reporters found in Kevin Farman's basement. Farman's basement, you see, was overflowing with red construction paper, lace, ribbons, banner-making materials, and paint. According to his wife, Patty, who gave reporters a tour of this fanciful workspace, her goofy, sweet-natured husband had a secret identity. He was the mystery figure who had bedazzled Portland's citizens for years. Kevin Farman was the Valentine's Day Bandit. Each year, on February 13th, the night before Valentine's Day, Farman would sneak around the city, stapling red hearts to telephone poles and sticking them in shop front windows. He would hang heart-blazoned flags from construction cranes and string them from boats in the harbor. Each year, Portland residents awoke on Valentine's Day to find their city covered with hearts. It made people smile. It made them wonder who was behind all this. They marveled that so many hearts could appear in just one night. It was, says Carrie Tyson, executive director of Portland Downtown, one part magic, one part sea salt, and one part fairy dust. Only now, their mystical bandit was gone. 2 months ago, as sun dawned on the first Valentine's Day since the death of their masked superhero, residents of Portland held their breath. No more magic, no more fairy dust. But when the citizens of Portland awoke on February 14th, just 7 weeks ago, they found their city plastered in hearts, so many hearts, more hearts than ever, said one resident. Radical resilience, observes Franciscan priest Richard Rohr, is a choice. We can choose love over anger, peace over violence, action over apathy. Now, I'm not saying that it's easy to make those choices. Look at the disciples. Look at the Easter morning choice they make. They scoff at the women's proclamation. They mock hope. They throw their lot in with history's cynics, with cocktail party pundits and internet trolls who've got it all figured out. You've heard their Good Friday mansplaining. Love doesn't win. It gets nailed to a cross. Trust me, love is done, dead and done. That's how the disciples respond. The disciples. But not Peter. Peter runs. My friends, Easter stands in the middle of life's hardest moments, and it doesn't blink. Easter does not deny the power of evil or the soul-sucking awfulness of death. Easter counters. Easter says, all the awful stuff that you've heard about, it's true, but the stone was rolled away, but the angels sang, but the women preached, but Peter ran. By now, many of you know that at some point on Easter, my phone rings. When I pick it up, a voice with no introduction, no pleasantries of any kind declares, "Jesus is on the loose." And the next sound I hear is the click of the connection ending. I know who it is. It's my roommate from seminary. It's his quirky way of saying Christ is risen. Now, over the years, other friends have joined this tradition. I get dozens of texts and emails already today declaring Jesus is on the loose. And it really wouldn't be Easter for me without this joyful chorus. Although, here, the exuberant chaos of Easter may give us pause. Is this really a cure for all that ails us? Silly phone calls, paper hearts. Come on, preacher, it's a nice story, it's cute and all that, but Easter had better have more up its sleeve than Valentine's stapled to telephone poles. The world is seriously messed up. If Easter's actually going to change the story, it's going to need to confront a planet enamored with egomaniacs and addicted to destructive behavior. What, in the face of all this bad news, does Easter have to say? I mean, can this old story possibly correct our course? But the stone, but the women, but life. Without a doubt, one of the most precarious moments in human history was the Cuban Missile Crisis. Vastly destructive nuclear weapons, those developed by Oppenheimer's team in New Mexico, those developed by their counterparts in the Soviet Union, were proliferating. These terrible bombs were mounted on long-range missiles and deployed around the world. And in the midst of it all, the United States vowed not to allow the Soviets to place nuclear weapons in Cuba. And the Soviets pointed to American nuclear weapons in Italy and Turkey and moved forward with their plans. The scales of history tipped toward disaster. Each side rattled their sabers. Each side threatened the other with annihilation. Bombers were put on standby. Missile silos opened their doors. At the most heated moment in the crisis, the United States instituted a naval blockade of Cuba, intending to prevent any additional Soviet missiles from making it to the island nation. Both sides drew up rules of engagement for their planes and their ships. On the Soviet side, submarines were ordered to respond with nuclear torpedoes if they were attacked with depth charges. And all that brings us to October 27th, 1962, when the world came quite possibly the closest it ever has to nuclear Armageddon. On that day, a Soviet submarine, a vessel simply named B-59, was running deep in the waters off of Cuba. It was followed by U.S. ships who were dropping small positioning charges to try and confirm the sub's location. Those on the sub, though, interpreted those positioning charges to be a full-on attack, and the captain of B-59 ordered the firing of a nuclear-tipped torpedo. The commander of the Soviet fleet in the Caribbean, Vasily Arkhipov, also happened to be on the submarine that day. He questioned the captain's order. He said, but what if this isn't an attack? What if this isn't what we think? Arkhipov argued that too much was at stake, the fate of the world, should they fire their torpedo. He convinced the sub-captain to surface to see what was really going on. B-59 did surface, and a nuclear launch was narrowly averted. Later, Thomas Blanton, director of the American National Security Archive, would remark, "A guy named Vasily Arkhipov saved the world." Now, this story has an interesting epilogue. As the two rival nations stepped back from the crisis, as they dialed down the tension, citizens all over the world sighed in relief. In fact, European countries who were in the midst of establishing the first ever satellite link to the United States conveyed their relief by sending an image across the Atlantic. What image did they send? The very first image that the United States received from Europe via satellite was sent by a team of scientists in France, and they chose to broadcast a picture from a fresco on the wall of the Miloseva Monastery in Serbia, the image of which adorns the front of your bulletin cover today. In this 13th century fresco, the angel Gabriel stares intently at viewers, right at us. The archangel raises an eyebrow toward a world in thrall to the powers of death, while pointing toward another way, to a vacant shroud and an empty tomb. But maybe, my friends, this is the word that we need right now. I mean, once we get past our adolescent snickers, does Easter's but hold in its grammatical magic more hope than we might imagine? I recently went for a walk in Central Park with a friend. I reached out in part because others were worried that he might be in a state of denial regarding his wife's health. This was not the case. Instead, I found myself chatting with someone filled with a sacred combination of honesty and hope. My friend explained that he and his beloved had not planned for her to receive a diagnostic curveball. And then he uttered that game-changing Easter word. But we are facing this together. "Don't worry, Scott," he said as our walk concluded. "We're okay. We don't know what path we're on, but we're focused on life, on living. There is no plan B. But we're focused on life, on living. There is no plan B." Those are strong words, Easter words. My friends, the world is a mess, and our lives aren't necessarily a whole lot better. Our first instinct, like the disciples cowering in the upper room, might be to respond to this mess according to the calculus of Good Friday. "It's rough out there. Don't be naive. Don't listen to idle tales. Don't navigate by hope. Keep your head down. And if anybody messes with you, fire your torpedoes." But then along comes Easter. Easter nods to the awful but points to the empty slab. Easter cringes at timid apostles but points to the preaching women. Easter has heard the overwhelming cadence of bad news, but then it raises an angelic eyebrow. Yes, hardship, but not surrender. Yes, suffering, but also joy. Yes, death, but life too. Life abundant, life generous. In the brief time that we have, life worth living. Not a self-centered life, but life lived for others, for this battered world, a life spent stapling paper hearts everywhere. Why not? Easter asks with a smile. After all, Jesus is on the loose. My friends, it is tough out there. But the stone is rolled away. But angels are pointing. But women are preaching. It is Easter, and we have reason to hope. Wrap your hearts in this hope. Live with brazen courage. Run with joy, knowing that Jesus is on the loose. Amen.
We hope this sermon has been meaningful to you and given you a measure of hope, encouragement, and good news. If you would like to make a donation to support this audio ministry, please visit fapc.org/give. Thank you and blessings to you on this day.